Aristotle then goes on and gives examples of other kinds of courage. I think that some of these might actually be more pertinent for us, and one of the great ways in which we can make use of Aristotle is to take his example as a paradigm case for understanding it, but then to apply it to all sorts of situations where this same analysis of finding the mean between the extremes of too much fear, which would paralyze us, and too little fear, which would be mere recklessness, are also operative in our life. I think, for instance, of those people who face serious sickness in a hospital bed and have to face sometimes painful therapies or a painful existence and yet do not surrender to the thoughts of self-destruction. Likewise, I live with the freshmen there at Fordham in one of the dormitories, and the peer pressure upon a freshman is more than most of us can imagine in the lives we lead. They are forced to deal with the expectations of wanting to be liked and wanting to be accepted. Many of the chats that we have until late at night have to do with how to resist that peer pressure and how to start to learn to evaluate what is an appropriate set of information they're receiving from their friends about how to conduct themselves and what is inappropriate information that they must learn to distance themselves from and to reject if they're going to have a prudent and modest and moral way of life. But the doing so requires virtue, and it requires specifically the virtue of courage, the facing the fact that not everything they do may meet with the acceptance of all their peers or the people by whom they most want to be liked, and yet which they must learn in order not to be wimps as well as not to be reckless. The scenarios are endless, I think. The confrontations that we might have to meet at work with people who are not doing their job and yet must be confronted by a manager. Or in our life, the confrontations we must make with respect, say, to dealing with an alcoholic uncle who needs to get treatment and yet who will resist even acknowledging that there's a problem. In all of these things, Aristotle's analysis of courage, I think, is much to the point. It's a matter of recognizing the fear and not disowning it, but not being paralyzed by it just as much as we do not proceed recklessly. Similarly, in his detailed analysis of temperance toward the end of the book, we have an analysis dealing with the strong feelings of pleasure, pleasures for food, for drink, for sexual intercourse, pleasures for sight or for hearing, and he has a ranking of the pleasures that are most involved. He thinks the pleasures of touch or things that are and taste are the things that are most important here with respect to the virtue of temperance. And here he tries to identify what the mean will be between the extremes of too much attraction to pleasure and too little. But here I think Aristotle is amusingly commonsensical. He takes note of the fact that for most of us, it's not a question of being too little attracted to pleasure, that there are very few of us which are insensitive to the pleasures of life. Although sometimes you find such a person, or sometimes you find an area in our life where we are insensitive to a given pleasure, most of the time the problem has to do with an excessive attraction to the pleasure. But here too you can see the great importance that Aristotle has laid from the beginning of his Nicomachean Ethics, a great sense of the importance on taking an accurate assessment of what it is to which we are more drawn. In this case, more drawn to the pleasure, and noting that pleasure itself will not be the standard by which to determine whether the thing is right for us. Rather, that pleasure might well be precisely the thing that we must examine and examine carefully so as not to put ourselves in a position of merely justifying all the time conduct that was actually harmful to us or harmful to our family or harmful to our community. Rather, taking note of precisely those attractions that we feel most vigorously, we do not regard the attraction itself as wrong, but rather it's a matter of the rightness or the wrongness of the reaction that we give to the attraction. This part of Aristotle has been among the most fruitful parts in the history of the rest of ethics. When you see, for instance, the tradition of Thomas Aquinas and medieval casuistry, you see such a strong sense when they talk about examinations of conscience, about the need not to judge ourselves for having had certain feelings, but only to restrict our judgment to what we do with respect to those feelings, because the feelings and the passions are truly something which stirs up in us without our trying. Rather, as Aristotle suggests, we bear responsibility for what we choose.